Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me is my co-host, Gretchen Winkler. Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
So check us out online. We put together most of our content based on your questions. Send them on in, as you have been doing. Lots of them. One User Friendly on Facebook, one User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com if you want to send it through the website. Did you miss a show? Would you like to listen to something again? Check out our podcast here at theanswerportland.com. All of that is available online at your discretion. So joining us today is our video game host and editor, Bill Snodgrass, who does video games, tabletop games, and a lot more. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. Paizo recently sent me the Starfinder Beginner's Box, and my only complaint so far is that it's something I feel should have come out sooner. Why? Because it's a great little thing, and this very well put together box set is everything you and your friends and family need to dive into the world of tabletop role-playing games. It has cardboard figures, dice, maps, character sheets, and well-thought-out full-colored rulebooks and starter campaign that make learning this game pretty easy, honestly. Now, this is a true beginner's box in that it does simplify some of the rules from the full game, which makes learning the basics of tabletop RPGs a lot easier for new players and especially younger players. While, this is a fact, it does keep with the spirit of the game by not removing anything important, except for one thing, and that is they do exclude the spaceship combat rules, but there is a reason for that, and until you really get the hang of them, they can be a little bit complicated, but they are super fun. You really start feeling like you're actually, you know, being part of a crew of a ship when you learn those. Again, those are excluded in this set. But if you've ever been interested in tabletop RPGs and the sci-fi settings, this is a great place to start, as I personally feel that the Starfinder game system is one of those few that you can really do whatever you want with it, a little bit of creativity. And you can go into any themed game you want. You know, if maybe you want a Star Trek or Star Wars, Firefly, Babylon 5, Stargate, whatever you'd like, you can really get into it. Anyway, if you're interested in more of my reviews or in a deeper look at gaming-related things, check out my podcast, the same place you can get this one.
Well, that sounds great. And we'll throw up on the social media how to find it. And if you have any questions for Bill Snodgrass, go ahead and also contact us that way. Up next is the news. So, Gretchen, what do we have in the news?
We have cyber attacks in the U.S. Costing cities and taxpayers a lot of money.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. So this is an interesting topic. It's one we first reviewed on Tech Tuesday here at KPAM on the first edition. And check that out every week on Tuesday mornings at 6:40 and again at 8:40 to hear the latest on the headlines. And we do explore these things a little bit more in depth here on the show. And what's going on is cyber attacks, specifically the kind of cyber attack known as ransomware, is really becoming a problem with a lot of different municipalities, including here in Oregon. And the one that we're looking at as kind of a example of this is actually Baltimore, Maryland. They're the ones that seem to have had the biggest situation with this, but there's a version of this going on in basically every state around the country somewhere. We're also seeing this in healthcare facilities and all kinds of other things. And what will happen is there'll be a malware virus. So it works just like any other computer virus in that sense, usually comes in by a link in an email or some kind of a social engineering attack like that. And what happens is when it comes in, it installs a piece of software on the computer that starts looking around your network. And you might not even know about this for a while, in some cases, weeks or even months. But what it's doing in the background is going through, identifying the files that are important, and encrypting them. And then what happens is all of a sudden the system locks out. All your important files are encrypted. And if you would like to unencrypt them, send us a ransom, usually by Bitcoin or something like that. And depending on the municipality, it can be thousands of dollars, in some cases hundreds of thousands, to try and unlock these files. Now, there's two problems with this. Number one, there's no guarantee that if you pay them, you're actually going to get your files back. And if you do, it might not work right again. So in the case of Baltimore, Maryland, they decided not to pay the ransom. And they're into it now, $14 million trying to fix the network. And when it took it out, it actually stopped the ability to file for things like building permits and all of the other things the city does. and really brought things to a stop. Biggest and best thing to remember here, whether you're working for a city or your own company or even just your own computer, if you don't recognize where the email came from, or if the link looks suspicious, or even if it looks like it's from a official normal company, check it out, be suspicious, make sure. And if you do see something that, oh, your bank account's been compromised, whatever the case may be, and you want to check it out, don't click the link in the email, but call or email the institution on your own. Make sure you initiate that conversation outside of the environment of the email that you've received to know that you're actually talking to who you think you're talking to.
Geez, that sounds pretty stressful. And to add on top of it, it looks like another 22 million passwords have been breached.
Yeah, and this is the problem. This is the real problem with these type of things, because what's going on here is that the hackers are being able to look more and more official. And we seem to be having data breaches weekly, if not almost daily now. And it's really becoming a situation where they actually can get more and more specific information. When they try to hack you, it looks more and more official. And the other problem with this is, again, using the same password on multiple sites means that if they've been able to get to your password in one location like this breach, then you have a situation where they can get into your other information. And we've talked a little bit about saving passwords and being able to keep things secure and the fact that none of us can remember 200 different ones. But you do want to make sure at the very least you have a password that's for your financial stuff that's separate from everything else, and at least break it down that way. Now, I know some of us, Gretchen, I think you do this too, kind of go old school and just have an analog book that you keep locked in your house, and that's how you store it.
Mm-hmm.
And that works fine. There are password keeper programs if you want to go that route, but it is time to change it again. And the funny thing, I don't know if it's funny, but the thing of it is with this particular one is this breach happens to be an organization that was warning people of password breaches and they got breached. So that type of a thing is definitely definitely an issue.
Okay, now tell us about MoviePass on a temporary shutdown.
Okay, so since you can't see it on the radio, I'm doing the air quotes for temporary because I think that's what this really is. MoviePass is a system that was kind of an all-you-can-eat, quote-unquote, idea for going to the movies. So you would pay a monthly fee. That monthly fee would get you into pretty much any movie you want, sometimes not IMAX and 3D, but all of the rest of them. So this monthly fee of like $20 got you this thing. And MoviePass, the idea was kind of interesting, but they were never able to get a deal with any of the theater chains to recognize it. So what they ended up doing was making the MoviePass card work like a Visa card. So when you would go to the movie, you would actually charge VisaPass the entry-level price for the movie that you were going to go see. And the problem is, it seems like they may have run out of money. Especially since the number of subscribers and the uses didn't, the business model wouldn't balance out. And the other thing I know is that they've gone from, they had in the millions of subscribers as short as a year ago to about 200,000. So what they're saying right now is they're on a temporary shutdown while they restructure. So whether or not we're actually going to see them come back is kind of a question. But if they do, it'll be interesting to see what they come back with.
And speaking of movies, Akira remake in the works. I'm not sure how I feel about this because that movie was like a classic.
Yeah, it is. There's also a series that came out of that was animated. A lot of people love Akira. In fact, in Reno, they have the Snafu Con every year, which is always a lot of fun. And there's Comic Cons like that all over the country. And this particular event, we're going to see kind of how it goes. It's actually a live-action movie. It was announced at the big one down in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. So it's live-action versus animation.
Yeah, it is live-action versus animation. It's going to start filming next year with a date, I believe, of 2022 to actually be in theaters. So, Akira fans, you have something new in the works. Let us know what you think about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Jeremy will want to see the motorcycle. Okay, Prime Day coming up this week. Tell me about that.
Prime Day is Amazon's answer to Black Friday in the middle of the summer. And this has been an event that's been going on for a couple of years now. You can get big deals, good specials on things, sometimes hourly and that type of a thing. Now, Prime Day this year is going to be 2 days this week. So make sure you have your Prime set up. Get on Amazon's account to see when it is. They've released some of the specials in advance, and it looks like they're going to have a bunch of good stuff this year.
Okay, and this one looks pretty important. Counterfeit Electronics Plague Department of Defense.
Yeah, so this is kind of a scary one. We are seeing a lot more counterfeit electronics just in general out there on the market. And we've actually seen things to complete iPods, iPhones, Android phones that replicate some of the better models like the Samsung ones and those type of things that are completely fake. In fact, in parts of the world, including China, there's actually full-on fake Apple stores. So in Beijing, there was one real one and three fake ones that all you couldn't really tell the difference unless you knew what to look for. But what's happening now is the components that are within some of our electronic devices are also being forged. And there's some rumors out there that a lot of this could be that some of this is actually being manufactured in places like North Korea, being sent to China, and then sold as made in China and branded, but they aren't really the thing. So what's happening with the Department of Defense is they're having a very difficult time in some cases knowing if the components that they've gotten in are the actual real deal or a forged version of them because they look just alike. And these kind of problems with the Department of Defense and other things can become very scary because, as we know, everybody out there is not necessarily our friends and might decide to use this ability to get into the product distribution line for components to be able to do something nefarious. And it is something very good to check for. If you are going out and getting your own equipment and you get it from a reputable dealer, you're most likely okay. I would still check it. But if you order online from something like an eBay or an online source like that, or even Amazon, where over 50% of their products are from third-party sellers, you want to make absolutely sure that the component you get is correct to the best of your ability. And you'll notice right away because it won't work quite right if it's not. So that's the news for this morning. After the break, we're going to be returning with an interview from the people from the Stumptown Comic-Con. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0 here on TheAnswerPortland.com. We've got a special thing for you today. Chaz Wellington, our reporter from Southern Nevada, is joining us. But you're not in Southern Nevada today, are you?
Actually, no, Bill. I am here in Anaheim, California for VidCon 2019. Now, this is a great event. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it sounds like a great event. You were already saying that. And I've seen a little bit of the coverage on this. What is VidCon? Let's go ahead and give us a background on it and what you've seen so far.
Well, nice. I've seen thousands of people. I mean, it's just great. This is your con is actually their phrase this year. VidCon it consists of three tracks, industry, creative, and community. And VidCon runs this year from July 9th to July 13th here in Anaheim. Of course, next year's VidCon is going to be in Australia. So our team had better get their bags packed. VidCon is actually a multi-genre online video conference for, you know, video creators, video producers, YouTubers, and this year, TikTokers. TikTok is a big thing. And you just everywhere you turn, it's either going on TikTok and or YouTube. VidCon was originally conceived by Hank and John Green of the Vlog Brothers, if you recall them, back in 2010. VidCon is actually the largest of its kind worldwide, and it was acquired by Viacom in 2018, but it's actually still a standalone subsidiary. This is just phenomenal. There's so many people everywhere doing so many things, and I've never seen so much activity in such a conference.
Now, I know you've gotten to talk to a few of these people, and I know you've got a couple of interviews right there live from the floor. Go ahead and tell us about the first one.
Okay. The first one is Rob Wilson from VidIQ. And Rob is very polite, hospitable about how he wants to go across with his product. And he's going to give us a little bit of information on that. And we'll go to Rob.
All right. So here we go with our first interview.
Yes, hello, Bill. Hey, VidCon 2019, Anaheim, California. I'm here at VidIQ with Rob Wilson. I'd like to, you know, get some information on his product, a little development background, and here's Rob.
So VidIQ is an addition to your YouTube experience. If you're a video creator, you want to have tools that will help you research YouTube, analyze videos on the platform, and take actionable steps to improve our own channel. And we have many tools that do that. We will show you what tags videos are using, we'll show you all of the analytics that are accessible from YouTube but a little difficult to hide, but we just put them on the front page so you can see that. And we have tools such as a channel audit, which will try and granulate the performance of your videos and tell you things such as these videos are getting a lot of subscribers. These videos are bringing in a lot of views, and it'll help you to what we call double down on your future content to grow your channel faster.
That's a great product. What do you see for the future at VidCon for vidIQ, and what do you have in store for us in the future?
So we are just about to launch our mobile app. That's the thing that we're most excited about at vidIQ. And I think as we go forward as a company, what we're doing here at VidCon is we're auditing channels and giving people personalized help to grow their channels. And we think we want to try and incorporate that more into our tools as well, because at the moment, we're looking at the analytics. We want to look more at the individual channels and try and give them specific, bespoke, tailored advice, which will hopefully help them grow even faster.
Well, this is great, Rob. I really appreciate you taking your valuable time out to
Absolute
speak with
pleasure.
Us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And we look forward to VidCon 2020.
2020, here we go.
You have a great day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Chaz, that sounds absolutely incredible. Give us a little bit of the behind the scenes on that.
So YouTube is you know, how you come across with your videos to the public, and how, you know, you got to find your way of creating it and making it great. But what VidIQ does is exactly that. It gives you a way to measure, give you metrics on your YouTube video, your following, what you need to do in the future, what you're doing wrong. It's just a really great product, and it's really helped a lot of YouTubers, especially Rainbow Master 18.
Sounds incredible. And what's our next interview?
Oh, our next interview coming is very exciting, because it's a new product that, to me anyway. And it's a free app that you can download and use to get the watermark off. I believe it's $33 a year, but it's an app that allows you to do green screen very easily. And you can put yourself anywhere in the world in any background. So we'll be going to Katya Bulatova with Kenamaster.
All right, and here we go.
Yes, hey. Hello, Bill. This is Chaz Wellington, user-friendly radio, back at VidCon 2019, and I'm California. And it's a great, great event. And we're here with Kenamaster and Katya Bulatova, and she's going to give us a bit of a background on her product and how it works. And here she is.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Kenamaster booth. Happy to have you all here. We're a mobile video editing application that is available for both Androids and iOS. And one of our biggest things that we're free. You can subscribe and get a premium feature with all the music and effects and overlays. It's only $33 per year, but the actual app is free unless you want to get rid of the watermark. Highly recommend the app. We've been in the business since 2013. We support Androids and iOS from the very, very beginning. So this is one of the biggest things that you can find for in terms of the video editing app, that we support all the devices. And let me give you a little tour around our booth.
Sounds great. Okay.
So today we're doing a demo showcasing our green screen, how you can use any background videos and applying the green screen video. You can transfer yourself from one location to another location. This is how major movies are made, how news and broadcasting is done, just using the green screen.
Wonderful.
Do you want to try it again?
Okay, we'll give that a run through as soon as the interview's over, and I really want to appreciate your time.
Awesome, thank you for having us, thank you.
Yes, Bill, this has been a great event. I really can't wait till VidCon Australia and or VidCon Anaheim again next year. So this event is just phenomenal at the Anaheim Convention Center. Thousands of people TikTok and videoing, doing their thing and trying to become famous. So until VidCon next year or the next event, we'll see you on User Friendly Radio. Thank you.
Chaz, thank you so much. And send your questions in. Have a question for Chaz? Send them to us through your website or through our website, actually, userfriendlyshow.com. And if you've missed anything or would like to hear anything again, pick up the podcast at theanswerportland.com, KPAM's website, and our official home. This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check us out on social media. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. Did you miss a show? Would you like to hear something again? Get our podcast here at theanswerportland.com. You can look back and find anything that we have done. And send your questions in userfriendlyshow.com. Joining us today is Sean Dodson from Subtown Events. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Now, we were talking a little bit before we started here about Stumptown SuperCon. Can you go ahead and tell us what that is and when it is and what people should expect?
Sure. Stumptown SuperCon is a costume-themed rolling dance party, a.k.a. a pub crawl. We start at Kell's Irish Pub on July 27th. We're actually going to be there about 2 o'clock. The event starts at 3 o'clock. And we have a rolling DJ podium. We go to a lot of great venues, restaurants, dance clubs. And there's a total of about 12 venues included in this event. And we're raising money for Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette. It's costume themed and costumes are required. So any kind of a superhero or supervillain that you want to be, come out and have a fun time.
So a cosplay pub crawl, that sounds like that's the way I could get into some trouble. So I'm definitely going to come down to that. What gave you this idea to do a cosplay pub crawl?
Well, we've been doing costume-themed events since about 2011. Started out with a SantaCon. We do probably the largest SantaCon in Oregon, definitely, and one of the largest ones on the West Coast now, with about 5,000 people every year. Our first event actually was a superhero pub crawl, I think 2010 or 2011, and the gentleman who actually started this up to begin with was doing this just for the fun of comics. He's been a comic book fan for his whole life, and this is actually kind of our inaugural event, so we've been doing this since, well, almost 10 years now. So the superhero pub crawl is just one of the fun chances to really show off your skills and talents and bring out, it's a chance to wear your costume, your cosplay in something other than just the conventions.
Yeah, and as we know, most cosplayers are always looking for an excuse. How many people participate, do you think, every year?
We usually get between 200 to 300 people come out, and the costuming, it's up to your choice, you know. Sometimes we get cosplayers who are really experienced and well into it and create their own extravagant costumes, down to somebody just wearing a cape and having a good time. We encourage people to be creative and to do more than just a t-shirt and a cape, but it's all for a good cause, raise money for local charities.
Yeah, and I know you're the vice president of Stumptown Events, and I know you said you're raising money for Planned Parenthood with this. Tell us a little bit about your nonprofit and maybe a little bit more of an overall description of what you do.
Well, we are a 100% volunteer nonprofit event production company. We produce mostly these costume themed pub crawl events, and we're expanding into some other types of events too to raise money for local nonprofit charities. The Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette branch is the one we're doing for this event. It's a locally Portland-based nonprofit. We've also raised money for Portland Sunshine Commission and Northwest Bartenders Association and several other great local charities too.
If someone wanted to volunteer or get in contact with you, how do they do it?
Well, we actually have a volunteer page on Facebook. It's Stumptown Volunteers. You can request to join from there, or you can send an email direct to contact@stumptownevents.org.
Alrighty. So stumptownevents.org or on Facebook, it's Stumptown Volunteers. We will have that also on our social media. And one last question for you before we let you go here in our last 30 seconds. Why is the event so popular? What is unique about this that you think draws people out?
One thing is all of our events are these costume-themed events, and everybody. I love giving people a subject, not really a structured format, and letting people seeing how creative people can be and what they can bring to the event. And also, it's more than just the pub crawl. We just don't go to individual clubs. We go to the fun dance clubs, and we have a rolling DJ podium, and we play music in between the events, and it's a rolling party from one place to the next.
All right, Sean. Well, listen,
it is a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. I'm going to be there. Stumptown SuperCon, July 27th, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock starting time at Kells. Check out our social media for more details. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me today is Patrick Weber and Mike Snyder. Did I get that correct?
Yes.
Very good. From the FCC, Patrick is the chief of the FCC Consumer and Government Affairs Bureau. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what we wanted to talk to you about is there one of the biggest things that we've been hearing that there's complaints about, and I know I've gotten some of them too, are robocalls. And this is becoming a bigger and bigger deal, and it sounds like there's some changes being made to actually allow this to be dealt with. So what's going on?
Yeah, that's correct. Just to let you and your listeners know, this is an ongoing problem the commission has been addressing over the last couple of years. We've seen these robocalls increasing over time because of advances in technology. They make it so much cheaper and easier for these scammers to bombard us with these illegal scams and the calls that are coming to our phones. So we're taking a multi-pronged approach here at the FCC. We're using our policymaking to allow and empower phone companies to actually block calls before the consumer's phones. So we're hoping that consumers will see those kinds of changes coming up in the next few months, a reduced number of calls. We're also taking strong enforcement actions against these illegal robocallers and hitting them in the pocketbook. So hopefully that will have a dent on how they're able to, you know, blanket us with these robocalls, make it very costly for them to do so. And then thirdly, we're reaching out in various ways to inform consumers about what's going on, how they can protect themselves against scams, illegal scams, and shows like this, like yours, we're hoping to get the word out to consumers on ways they can protect themselves.
So let's actually start at the beginning of that, because, and these are some of the many questions we get in here, especially as this has been becoming more and more of a problem. If a subscriber, like a Verizon or AT&T user, you know, whatever phone company, wanted to block the call, how would they go about doing that? Is that something through the phone company? Do they file with something like a do not call list? Or is there another way to do it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We encourage consumers to reach out to their phone provider. Just last month, the FCC adopted a declaratory ruling that allowed phone carriers to block by default. And we actually just heard yesterday from one of the major phone carriers that is implementing that policy right now. So consumers actually don't have to sign up for that. Now, that's up to the individual phone carrier to do that. And one of them has done that. AT&T, we heard from just yesterday, they had a press release. So what they will do is they'll notify consumers they're going to be blocking calls. Consumers can say, no, I don't want you to block calls. You know, I want to opt out of that. But they could do it by default, and AT&T is actually going to be doing that. So we're expecting other major phone carriers to do that as well. If consumers don't have that yet, they can certainly call their carriers and ask if it's on the way. They also opt in to certain services that their carriers are providing right now that they can opt to. So they just have to take a step to that affirmative step. And then also they can check on third-party applications on their smartphones, their mobile phones. There's plenty of third-party, companies that can block calls for them. So, you know, consumers would have to sign up for those services.
Now, when somebody signs up, is it something that you think is actually going to work? The phone company will know it's a robocall and actually be able to stop it?
Well, there has been, over the last few years, there has been some advances in the analytics that they're using in these companies. The data that they're seeing, you know, they're able to see calls, you know, transmitting over the networks and kind of, you know, look at patterns, certain types of calls, lengths of calls. They can look at various things and either label the call so that a consumer could decide for themselves. If the label might say, you know, potential spam or likely spam, or the company could just block the call for the consumer. The consumer's phone wouldn't even ring. Some of the carriers will put it, you know, a blocked call on just a list, a call log, so you'll see what numbers were blocked. There's various things that these carriers can do. So, you know, it's really good for the consumer to check out what's available to them.
Okay, no, that sounds great. And then you were talking a little bit at the beginning about enforcement and what's going on with that. And I know one of the things that I've experienced is in the middle of the night, and it's happening two or three times a week, where the phone will ring once. And my understanding is if you call back, you actually get to an international call or something like that. So how does enforcement work both inside and outside of the United States?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we've taken over $200 million in enforcement actions over the last couple of years against these illegal robocallers and spammers. It can be challenging to go after these entities that are located outside of the United States. And the scam that you were talking about, where it rings once late at night, they're trying to get you to call them back because it is a toll call. So you will be charged, you know, a toll for calling that number back. And they're trying to get you, you know, catch you when you're, you know, you're asleep or you're, you know, groggy and you're not really sure, you know, maybe this is an emergency. So that's their scam, is to just try to get you to call them back. We encourage consumers to not call back numbers that they don't recognize. We also encourage consumers to don't answer the phone when their call ID shows a number they don't recognize. That's a couple of ways that consumers can protect themselves against scams going forward. But, you know, as far as international enforcement, we are working with other authorities in other countries. And we also, the chairman of the FCC, Chairman Pai, just announced yesterday that he's proposed new rules to implement going after these illegal callers in other countries. The Congress passed a law last year, the Ray Bonds Act, which gave us the authority to do so. We just have to implement rules to be able to do that. And also, it goes for texting as well, to go after illegal texters who are trying to scam consumers. And that's with regards to spoofing the number. So, you know, they'll put a number, the scammers will put a number on your phone, on your caller ID, that looks like it's a local number, but it's really not. You know, it's from another, it's from them, and they may be located overseas. So this gives us additional authority to go after those scammers.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be my next question, was caller ID spoofing. Yeah. And you kind of hit on it a little bit here. Now, I also understand they're doing some changes to actually allow for that to be either blocked or to verify that the caller ID is correct. Can you touch upon that a little bit?
Yeah, that's another great point, and something else, part of our multi-pronged approach is to work with carriers on developing solutions for caller ID authentication. As we know, as a mentioned, you know, these illegal scammers can spoof numbers like they're a number that's local to you, so you might think, well, maybe it's a neighbor or a company I do business with here locally, or they may try to spoof a number that appears as like a local agency, like either a police agency or maybe the Social Security office, you know, something like that. They're trying to trick you into getting you to answer the phone and to believe they're claiming to be somebody who they're not. But using that caller ID might get you to believe something that's not actually true. So what the commission is working on, the carriers, the chairman of the FCC has demanded that the carriers do this, the major carriers do this by the end of this year, by the end of 2019. And that's implement caller ID authentication. It requires all of them to cooperate. So it's a lot of work amongst all of the providers to do. The technical term is called shaken and stir. And what it means is these carriers, when a call is originated, when you dial a number and originate that call, they can sign that number and say, this is an authentic number. This user is verified to use this number. And then on the receiving end of that call, the other carrier who gets that call and transmits it to their user, they can verify, yes, that is the right number. And so that's just a way for them to validate that caller ID, and so the consumer can know, you know, if they choose to let the consumer know it's a valid call, they'll know, yeah, this is the real number. This is not a spoof number.
Now, I'm looking forward to being able to see that because I know that's been a big deal. We'll be back and continue with our interview with the FCC right after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. On the phone with us is Patrick Weber and Mike Snyder. Patrick is the chief of the FCC Consumer and Government Affairs Bureau, who is joining us to talk about what they're doing with robocalls. Welcome back. Question that's coming in, do these protections work on a landline as well as a cell phone?
Yeah, that's a good question. Some landlines, yes, they will work on. The landlines that use voice over internet protocol, VoIP, VoIP, those will be able to implement this caller ID. The ones that use some old technology, It won't necessarily work on those, but, you know, carriers are looking at ways that they can also authenticate, you know, caller ID on those lines, or, you know, transition those lines over to VoIP lines so that they will be compatible with this new technology.
All right. We've got about 30 seconds left. Can you give us any other pointers? You've touched upon it a little bit, how to protect themselves. And if somebody has fallen victim to a scam, what do they do?
Yeah, we encourage consumers to file complaints with us at the FCC. FCC.gov is the easiest way to do it. Just look for consumer complaints. They can also, you know, call us. We have an 888 number. It's 888-CALL-FCC. And if they are victims of scams, they should report that to the local authorities to see what they can do about, you know, getting their money back, you know, and to report it to them. But as far as, you know, what we do with the call complaints, we use that, you know, we don't investigate every complaint that we get, but we do compile data, and we use that data to investigate our own, you know, the violations that we see here from our enforcement bureau. So we use it to go after bad actors. If we see patterns, we can use that to go after these bad robocallers and impose fines against them in order to hopefully shut them down.
All right, Patrick, Mike, thank you so much for joining us today. Patrick Weber, Chief of FCC Consumer and Government Affairs Bureau. Well, what a week. What a bunch of great interviews. I want to thank everybody that joined us this week. It's always good to get this information out and finding out what the FCC is actually doing. And it sounds like we do have some kind of an enforcement mechanism that's going to be put into place here. I think it is great to actually hear that and also know that they're working on the caller ID spoofing, because this has been such a big problem over the years. And it's not that hard to do. Anybody can go on. You can put in whatever phone number you want with just a few clicks of a piece of software, and it will say that you're calling from whoever it is that you want to say that you're calling from. So Stumptown SuperCon, that sounds like a great event coming up. And they do a number of events throughout the year, raise some money for some great charities. So we're going to be out there checking that out and talking about what's going on. The pub crawl sounds like it will be a lot of fun. And next week, we're going to have an interview with FEMA to talk about the technology that's used in the event of a natural disaster. Southern California's gotten hit with two big earthquakes, and the big one's about to happen up here. So, well, not about to happen, but they say it will at some point, probably during our lifetimes. Don't want to scare anybody with that, but it is at some point inevitable. So join us next week here on User Friendly. This is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.